Hello, welcome to another Rallisupper Extra. We are, over the next few weeks, showing you the long interviews we did with experts on various subjects for Rich Herring's Meaning of Life. Before they were subscribe only, but now they're going out for free because we're lovely people. If you want to help us make more podcasts, why not go to gofasterstripe.com/badges. Buy a monthly badge. You get all kinds of benefits, like a secret channel with backstage interviews, and an entry to a monthly draw, and also it helps fund the podcast. And if you just want to do a one-off thing, you can just buy a badge, but monthly is better. If you want to buy some merchandise, go to gofasterstripe.com/aotima. I'm nearly better. It's been a long, old month of illness. I'm still on tour, despite being not very well. Here are my upcoming tour dates. In the short term, I've just come off the page like a buffoon. I'm at the Forest Arts on the 1st of March. I think that might be sold out. It's nearly sold out as I speak. It might be sold out while you are here, while you're listening. I'm at Worthing on the 2nd of March. That one's definitely not going to be sold out. So if you're in Worthing, come and see me. Fareham and Colchester also sold out. And then Sunday, the 5th of March, Canterbury. 8th of March, Haywards Heath. 9th of March, Aldershot. Again, nearly sold out. Then Bath, Lancaster, Barton-upon-Humber, Liverpool. It goes on. Go to richherring.com/the_best/tour and you can see all of my tour dates. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the show so far. It's been going really well, and that is a good thing. Apart from being ill, how old I look, when did I get this old? There's a light right above me. That's reflecting off my still very brown hair. Oh my God. Why, God? Why curse you for making me get old this way? Anyway, sit back and enjoy this interview with Richard Wiseman and talking about the paranormal. It's a lot of fun. Hope you enjoy it. Bye. Richard Herring's Meaning of Life. Now, will you please welcome to talk more about the paranormal, the fantastic Professor Richard Wiseman, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. Thank you for coming along. Love to see you. Thanks for coming along.
Pleasure.
Good. So I've been reading your book. It's here, handily enough. Look, I'll hold that up to the camera. You might sell 3 copies of that as a result of this. I think you've probably sold more than 3 already. It's a very, very good book.
It's very good.
I very much enjoyed it. I've read it twice. Paranormality, why we see what isn't there. So you're going to explain to me the science behind the paranormal. But I want to take you through a few of... some things, that paranormal things that have happened to me that I think are inexplicable. And I want to see if you can explain them. When I was on tour a few years ago in the 90s with Stuart Lee and Richard Thomas, making up your own jokes now. Richard Thomas, actually, you are laughing. It just reminded me, Richard Thomas did one of the funniest things ever on that tour that I had forgotten about until this second, where I'd put a Do Not Disturb sign on my door and... I think he flipped it around. It was the breakfast menu on the other side. He ticked every single thing on the breakfast menu. So the next morning, literally, and they came, and 2 people came,
yeah,
both to carry it and to look at the greediest man in the world.
That's funny, yes.
And I had a full, double full English breakfast, and I was vegetarian at the time, so it was doubly amusing.
Is that the paranormal experience you wanted explaining?
No,
because that's... That's an easy bowl.
No, that's just by the by.
Okay.
When I was on that tour, we were young and we got drunk quite a lot and I was quite tired. We didn't sleep very much, I have to say. And I went, I think it might have been in Guildford, I went to sleep on the dressing room floor and then I woke up, I thought, and on my chest there was an old woman. I thought it was Richard Thomas for a moment, the writer of Jerry Springer the Opera, but it was an old woman sitting on my chest.
Right.
And strangling me. Mm. And I kind of had to fight her off, and then she disappeared.
Yeah.
Explain that with your science.
Well, if you are backstage, and it's an area that old women can get access to, if she's seen you work before and hasn't enjoyed the show, she maybe thinks, there he is asleep. I'll go and sit on his chest and strangle him.
That could be. That is a good explanation, actually. Well done. But she did sort of disappear the minute I officially woke up.
Yeah.
So would it...
I haven't got a clue.
You haven't got a clue?
you would want an expert on paranormal experiences. I think what you probably experienced was not an actual old woman.
No, I don't think it was.
The disappearance would be a clue.
Yeah. Was the fact that I was asleep a clue as well, do you think?
Yeah. So it's what we psychologists would call unusual. And it's probably a night terror come sleep paralysis. And so what's happening is when you fall asleep, when you dream, you're paralysed, so you don't act out your dream. And some people don't. They actually do act out their dreams, mm-hmm. and that's quite funny. But they also remove themselves from the gene pool fairly rapidly for doing that. So you're paralysed, and then when you come to, as it were, you start to regain consciousness.
I didn't come to. A little bit. She definitely came. That's why I thought, when you come to.
When you regain consciousness after having ejaculated, actually, during dreams, of course, you have an erection. Not just you. Not just you, everyone.
Nice
well, not everyone.
Them, nice men. I get them some of the time. Yeah. Been a while.
So both men and women are sexually aroused during dreams. Well, they're not actually. They are. Their genitalia is aroused.
Okay.
They are. They might
that
be.
That is part of them, though, right? That isn't like a. You're telling me a genitalia is like a creature that lives on us, and when we're asleep, it comes alive and.
Yes.
This is terrifying. I never thought we'd get to this. Not this quickly. There's lots of sort of detached genitalia running around having sex with each other whilst we sleep. I saw a film on the internet once about a woman who had a genitalia that lived on her, and it kind of ate people, but very slowly. And they went,
I was talking.
Yes, I.
About the penis mm-hmm. and the vagina, and I used the term genitalia as a collective noun.
Okay.
I'm now regretting it. To be honest, I wish I hadn't mentioned the entire sexual arousal, because it's not even important to the story. I was just throwing it in on a whim. So there you are, sexually aroused and paralysed. You start to regain consciousness,
yeah.
And you think, well, I can't move. That's a bit weird. And then your brain, as it often does, makes up a story to tell you to explain the paralysis. And it tells you there's somebody pinning you down. And it depends on your belief system as to what you think that is. Some people think it's like the devil. Some think it's an alien. And for some reason, your brain decided to come up with an old woman.
Yeah.
Which is a curious choice. It could have come up with anything. It could have come up with, you know, an attractive young woman.
Yeah.
But oh no.
I'm the only gerontophile in show business. That's, and that makes me safe. I'm safe.
And then what happens? It's quite a scary experience, actually. So then you slowly drift into proper consciousness, and you realise there's not an old woman there, and so your brain makes her disappear, and then you're fine. But the thing to do, if you have it again, is try and wiggle your toes, because that breaks the paralysis quite quickly, and then the drift through consciousness is much faster.
I wanted to go. I wanted to stay. It's nice having a friend on that tour. Just for one second. That's quite interesting. I also had lucid dreaming once, which was terrific, but I was sort of punished for this lucid dreaming.
Mm.
And I did better in my lucid dream. I realised I was... this is where you can control your dreams. This is quite an exciting thing. You're asleep, but you realise you're asleep, but you don't wake up. And then you can... This is something you can train yourself to do a little bit.
Yeah, you have to be careful, because you think you are... Well, you're aware that you're dreaming, and therefore you can control your dreams. But for some people, it's so realistic that when they're awake, they think they're in a dream.
Well, this is the problem I had with it. I have to, honestly, it was so frightening. I was in my flat and I said, right, I know I'm asleep. I'm going to go into my bedroom and there'll be two women in bed. And I went in, there were three women in bed. It was even better than I'd imagine. And then...
You were in somebody else's bedroom.
and I thought, oh, and I got into bed, but then I think I fell out of bed in the dream and that woke me up, I thought.
Right.
But then I went about my day
yep.
and then I realised I spotted something that wasn't right. And then I realised I was asleep. And then I woke up again, but then I... And every time I woke up about 8 or 9 times in the dream.
She had 8 or 9 false awakenings within the dream.
And one of them, I just looked around the room and I was thinking, am I really awake this time? And then I saw like a joss stick burning in my room. And I thought, well, like, that's not my room. that's all I could see. So then I woke up. And then I thought, in the dream, I thought, I'm never going to wake up. This is it. I'm stuck in this dream. I'm never going to wake up. How am I going to get out of the dream? And then my alarm went off and I thought woke me up. But then what if it didn't wake me? What if I'm still in the dream? And that week was the week that I met Julie Swala, and then she said she wanted to go out with me. And I thought, yeah, I'm still asleep. And maybe I'm just living out this dream and I'm going to wake up and I'm going to still be back in that room in Balham. Could that happen? Has anyone ever had that, something that's a lucid dream that's gone on that long and false awakenings?
They have, but they've been sectioned shortly afterwards. So... that's a lot. That's a lot of false awakenings.
There was all sorts of stuff. And there was one bit of it, and I've just remembered, there was a bit where I met Mark Lamar outside my house, and we went to a swimming pool and watched a swimming tournament during, this is one of the dreams. And it wasn't lucid dreaming at this point. This isn't what I wanted to happen. And then we were sitting on raked, usually people's dreams are quite boring, aren't they? This is pretty fucking amazing, this dream. We're sitting on raked seating, and then there were all the lifeguards turned into sort of Nazi guards, and the pool became electrified, and the seats all started lifting up, and we started falling into the pool, and I fell into the pool, and you know, usually if you die in a dream, you wake up. I died, and I didn't wake up for a bit, and then I woke up. But it was, I actually managed to die in the dream. It was terrifying.
That's very unusual.
Yeah.
Great. Had you been consuming what I would refer to as drugs?
No, I hadn't. I thought you were going to say, had you been consuming a lot of cheese? And I said, is this your psychologist? Yeah, eating a lot. Had you eaten like 3 different cheeses before? That explains that. I hadn't. I was probably drinking quite heavily.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. yes, you were drinking quite heavily, would be my guess. And if we can edit out before that the comment that you say that, because then I'll look really accurate in terms of a diagnosis.
Yes. We definitely will do that.
Good. I think you were probably drinking, but it is unusual to have false awakenings and dreaming of your own death, because normally you can't dream about experiences you haven't, at least you couldn't imagine very, very easily. The thing to do if it happens again, little hint and tip here, first of all, have nothing to do with Mark Lamar,
That was the clue that he was being really friendly, you know, that was...
and the other two things you could do in lucid dreaming is try and turn on the lights, because normally that breaks the lucid dream. It's very hard to alter illumination levels. And the second thing is, best thing to do, actually, look in the mirror.
Right.
Because you can't... Ooh. You can't... Why do you go, ugh?
She thinks if you look in the mirror, then something terrible's going to happen, right? Someone's going to come out and grab you. That's definitely what would happen.
It would, like Candyman. It's not. It's... what happens is that your brain tries to construct your own reflection, which is really hard to do, and it breaks the lucid dreaming quite rapidly.
Right.
So there we are. Tips and hints.
It's good. Well, it's good to know. I'd like to lucid dream again. That was about the only time it ever happened to me. It was
very, very hard to do.
It was worth it. But I'm still worried that I'm still in that dream. Because, you know, my life's gone so impossibly well. And have I got another? Can you explain this? Then we'll get on to some proper questions. Mm. When I was about 23, 24, I was in a supermarket and I was just sort of looking at some... I was just sort of standing by the freezer. And there was like shelves behind me, and then a man started walking towards me, pointing at me, and he went, "Herring," and this was before anyone knew who I was, "Herring, herring, herring," and he was mumbling herring, and he was pointing at me, and I was going, and he reached towards me, and he reached right by my ear, and then took a tin of herring off the off the shelves. That is impossible. That's statistically impossible that could happen.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. The weird thing.
I didn't notice a chapter on that in your book, so no, I'd ask.
No. So if you're a psychologist, you go to a party, and someone finds out you're a psychologist.
Yeah.
What they do is they say, oh, there's a couple of things they say. One is, you must be sort of reading my thoughts thing. And you think, I'm not a psychic, I'm a psychologist. And then they kind of go, could you help analyze this particular problem? And, which is very, very bizarre, because you think, well, if you meet a builder at a party, you don't kind of go, well, could you put up an internal wall while you're here? And also it suggests that I give a fuck about them, which I don't. And psychologists don't. They get paid to care. That's why they do it. And then, so you then explain, I'm a parapsychologist, and I'm nothing to do with clinical stuff, as you might imagine from my demeanour. And then
does that mean you're flown in and dropped into areas where...
Yeah. If there's a major accident, like a car accident, I'm flown in and the person's laying there and I say, and how do you feel about that? It's remarkable. So explain what that is. And then they start telling me their paranormal experiences. And they are, they're not as good as your paranormal experiences.
Great,
yours were A-grade paranormal experiences. Normally it's, oh, then you'll be interested in this. And you go, oh, for fuck's sake. And then you're trapped at this party with this person. Normally a woman, actually. Normally a woman. The guys don't do this so much. Normally a woman. Kind of going, oh, it was really odd. And they go into this enormously lengthy story. And you sort of zone out halfway through. Zone in at the end and go, well, that's really interesting. How did that make you feel? and walk off. That's my life at parties.
How does that make you feel?
That's right.
So, have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
I don't do monsters.
No.
No, I've always...
Well, it's not like you get the choice. If a Bigfoot comes up to you, you can't just ignore it. You have to look at it.
No. As an academic, you have your niche. Okay. And if a monster were to approach me, I would say, I don't do monsters.
Right, okay.
And that would be that. I don't do monsters, and I don't do UFOs.
Okay.
So I've done psychics, I've done mediums, and all sorts of weird things, but not UFOs and Bigfoot.
Have you ever... These are my two Leicester Square Theatre questions.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
I've investigated
lots, and spent many a night in a haunted house. I haven't seen one, in part because they don't exist. And the people that claim to have seen them are liars. or mad. So one of those two. I've been to lots of haunted houses. I've never seen anything, I think, even slightly odd. Or weird. I've got a
genitalia you might be interested in.
did an investigation at Hampton Court Palace.
Yeah.
And so they phoned us up and they said lots of people are having weird experiences in a part of the palace which is called the Haunted Gallery. And I thought, no suggestion there then. And so the team and I turned up for 10 days in the Haunted Gallery and we gave these little public talks about the haunting, which was because allegedly Henry VIII had chopped off the head of Catherine Howard and she'd come back to haunt in the gallery.
Where you would. You would.
You would, yes.
If you could, you would.
Yeah. And then on day two, we were joined by a woman, and this woman was criticising my history when they're doing the talks, but from a first-person perspective. So she was saying, I wasn't dragged up the gallery, I was dragged down the gallery. And I was saying, what are you talking about? And she was the reincarnation of Catherine Howard.
Wow.
Yeah. And she stayed with us for 10 fucking days. And she was invaluable... in absolutely no way at all. You simply wanted her to leave.
You could have said, have you ever come back here as a ghost? And then if she said no, then you could have shut down the investigation.
Yes, right.
No, I've just come back here as a reincarnation. Don't be ridiculous. I would never be a ghost. I'm a reincarnation.
She's very annoying, very annoying. And because there was that great study, it was a psychiatric study, it wasn't a paranormal study, where they got all the people, a load of psychiatric patients that believed they were Jesus and put them all in the same room together. And just... just film them arguing. And what I like is it had no therapeutic value at all. It was, we're just bored. Get all the Jesuses down. Stick them in the room. So
they all forgave each other, I hope. That would be the best.
I think, if my memory serves me, I think that one decided to be Jesus on Monday and the other would say Tuesday and they agreed amongst themselves what day they would be Jesus. I think that was the end point of it. So, anyway, sorry, I digress.
No, good. So, and one of the things you saw at Hampton Court was you set up a scanner which could detect different body heats and
yes.
heats. And then yes. did something appear in 6 o'clock in the morning?
It did. So we had these scanners, very, very sophisticated heat scanners that were brilliant for doing magic tricks with, actually, because you could do this trick. We'd have three chairs. You'd say to somebody, go and sit in a chair and come off again, and you wouldn't see that. And then you put the heat scanner on, and you could tell which chair they'd sat in just from the heat of their arse
right.
On the thing. It's very good. That's the best use of it. And 60,000 quid well spent. So that's right. So we set up the scanner, and then every morning we come in and look at the heat sensors, and there was nothing happening, nothing happening. And then one morning the heat sensors were showing something about 6 in the morning, and there's no security at that point. So we looked through the actual videotape from the heat sensor, and we saw a figure, a ghostly figure, come through the door. And the Catherine Howard reincarnation recognised the figure as a member of her court. So that's how we knew there was nothing paranormal going on. And then he got out, the ghostly figure got out a vacuum cleaner and started vacuuming. So the whole thing was a waste of time, to be honest.
A very helpful ghost.
Very helpful,
you
very
know,
nice
if
ghost.
If you're stuck for eternity on, and you're not allowed to go to heaven, you might as well do a bit of cleaning, why
yeah.
not?
Yeah, yeah.
And you, there's some interesting stuff about, well, there's a lot of interesting stuff in this book. There's things about the Victorians used to do table, Ouija boards and moving, putting their hands on tables and the tables would start to move.
Yeah.
Even though no one was moving it, they claimed themselves.
Yeah.
So is that proof of table moving ghosts?
Well,
they've come back to move furniture around.
It is. No, it's not.
No.
But it is. It is great. I don't know if you ever done a table turning session.
No,
it's great. You have to be very slightly drunk, and you have to have quite a light table, and then about sort of four or six of you sit around, and you put your fingertips on the table very lightly, and after about 20 minutes, half an hour, it will start to move around, and it the thing shoots around the room. It's great. And basically, you use idiomotor action, what it means, unconscious movements. So when you imagine your hand moving in a certain direction, unconsciously you push in that direction. At some point, everybody's pushing in the same direction, just by chance initially, and that rocks the table over. It's fantastic. It's great. You've done loads of seance stuff. My favourite seance thing is actually the darkroom seances, which we did about 20 years ago. Because the Victorians had sort of manuals on how to do fake seances. And so in a darkroom seance, you have luminous tabs on objects, and they move around the seance room. And according to the manuals, it's simply a man creeps into the seance room with a long stick and moves the objects. And I've got sort of background in magic, and I thought, I'm not sure that wouldn't fool anyone, so we thought we'd reconstruct it. So we did it over in Clerkenwell, in an underground sort of prison, disused prison. And we got these people in, and they all sat around, total darkness, and the man with the stick came out, leant over, moved all the objects, but you get disoriented in the dark. And so when the medium, or there's an actor playing the part of the medium, put the lights back on, the group looked up, and there's a man holding a stick, feeling his way. And to his credit, he turned to the group and went, "Ignore me." That was one of my favourite seance things.
And then after the session, you found out the man with the stick had died 24 hours before. No. He was a ghost. So none of it... Because what's kind of quite weird about the paranormal is that people have these amazing powers and then use them to do quite mundane and pointless things. So they talk to the dead and find out the first letters of people's names,
yeah.
which seems a waste of that talent. Or they, you know, they have the power to bend metal and just wreck a load of forks. You could do something, you know, quite evil or amazing with that power, but...
Well, they never predict the lottery.
No.
Well, that would be handy.
It wouldn't be that good, though, would it? Because if they were good at it, everyone would do the numbers and you would only win a pound. You might win less than a pound. If someone said, here's the lottery numbers, everyone would put their money on those lottery numbers and you'd get less back than you actually put on.
It would be a different lottery if there was a reliable process, yeah. I agree. They don't do that. They do financial astrology. You know, financial astrology is great. It's where the astrologer looks at the birth date of a company and tells you when to invest in the company on the basis of astrological charts. And about 10 years ago, we did an experiment where we got a 5-year-old child who did her investments totally randomly, and then we compared her to a financial astrologer using all these charts and stuff. And the child outperformed the financial astrologer. And at the press conference, we said to the financial astrologer, why did the child beat you? And she said, well, I've only just found out the child is actually a Pisces, and that's really lucky. That's one of my favourite moments.
But I think a lot of these things, you might as well go with fortune cookies, just go follow their advice. It's as good just stick with something. I think that's quite good. Just follow the advice of someone and just stick with it. You don't have to make any decisions.
Yeah, or a friend. That would be somebody who's got some sense of caring about you might be another one. Yes.
And there's quite an interesting... I'll go into the slightly more serious aspect of this in a second. There's a... I quite like the story about, is it Jeff or Geff, the talking mongoose?
There is a big debate about whether it is Jeff or Geff.
Right. Let's have that debate.
Let's have that debate now.
I think it's clearly Geff.
Unfortunately, I'm with you on the Geff thing, it's not going to be much of a debate. But there's another group of academics who believe it's Jeff.
Yeah. And it's sort of less sort of mystical, isn't it, Jeff?
Yeah, that's why
Jeff, the talking mongoose. Geff is like, oh, he could be. That could be real Geff. It sounds like he's from another dimension. Geff. Yeah, I'm the talking mongoose. My name's Jeff. Nice to meet you. That doesn't work for me.
So that's very similar to my position on it. And so we're of the Geff group.
Yeah.
The Jeff people, they make me sick. They they come along and. You take something like a talking mongoose, which is interesting, and they called it Jeff. I will have nothing to do with it. So very much on the Geff front. Geff was a talking mongoose from the... Oh, he wasn't.
He might have been.
He might have been.
It's a mystery unsolved. It's never been solved.
Well, it's not much of a mystery. It's Isle of Man, 1930s.
Yeah.
What happened? There's a cottage in the middle of nowhere, and this family say they've got a talking mongoose that lives between the outer and inner walls of the cottage and runs around. And you rarely...
So far, I'm with it. Yeah. So far, so good.
Who hasn't? Got yeah. And you don't ever see the mongoose, but he shouts through the wood panelling. And then word spreads from the Isle of Man to London about the talking mongoose. And so Harry Price is one of my heroes, a psychical investigator, and Richard Lambert, who was head of the BBC, actually, at the time, one of the very senior in the BBC. Both of them go over to the Isle of Man, investigate, and the talking mongoose won't speak to them.
Because they didn't believe enough in him. That's why you've got to believe in... They were calling him Jeff. He's going, I'm not talking to them.
So they come back and publish a book on it, and then I think Lambert was potentially going to be promoted and didn't get the promotion. He thought on the basis of the fact he'd just written a book about a talking mongoose. So he sued for libel and won a very large amount of money in the libel courts over his book on the talking mongoose. True, not an interesting story, but a true one.
So what who do you think was making... Geff speak if it wasn't a real mongoose?
There was a lot of attention on the teenage daughter. It's often teenager. Poltergeist cases normally involve teenagers.
Yeah.
Because they're little shits. And they basically just fuck around. And then gullible adults go, well, it couldn't be my darling daughter or son. It must be a talking mongoose. They make that what the philosophers refer to as a leap of error. I think it was meant to be the daughter throwing her voice in a sort of vent-type way, a bit like sort of Roger De Courcy and Nookie Bear, but more plausible. Yes, I think that's what...
I can sleep safely at night now. I'm worried about...
I realised I just dated myself. When I thought of event, I thought of Roger De Courcy and Nookie Bear.
You did date yourself.
Yeah, I know. That's how it shows.
Is it mongoose or mongooses or mongeese?
There's a big debate about that.
Yeah. It's not really... I mean, I could just look in a dictionary, but now I've got you here. Be interested to hear what you think.
A group of mongoose would be... So you've got several mongoose, and you would say, look at those mongeeses.
Mongeeses.
You've covered your bases. Okay. You've covered your bases. Have we got any expert? What would it be? Group of mongoose.
Mongai,
thank you.
Ricky Gervais in the audience there. So, let's get on to the more serious side of this, because it is fairly easy to explain most of these things. I like in your book the way you describe, I was talking about Nostradamus earlier on, but the way that if people are predicting things through dreams or in, you know, in ways that are quite vague, eventually so many people are dreaming or so many people are guessing that something will happen that will, it just logically, statistically makes sense. If you keep it vague, you'll probably hit it. Yeah. If millions of people are dreaming about events, someone will dream about a plane crashing the day before a plane crashes, because we all dream about that all the time.
Yeah, so this is the law of large numbers. You have about 5 dreams a night. Each one's about 20 minutes long, and you don't tend to remember them unless an event happens the next day that then triggers the memory, and you forget the other dreams and so on. So that's sort of what's happening with dream precognition. I saw a poster. I was going to tell you this, actually. I saw a poster on the Tube yesterday that's for a Christian singles dating site. Have you seen this? Is it very well known or something? And it says, God knew you were going to read this.
Yeah. He was right, wasn't he? Well, he got that, he's got you.
But
take that, science.
But this is the thing. I looked at it, and as a scientist, I'm going, yeah, but you didn't mention it before now. So you're only mentioning it once the prediction comes true. If I'd have got a letter that morning, and then it'd be a lot more interesting prediction.
From God. Then from it would God. Have been, it would have been less exciting prediction. You'd be going, fuck, I got a letter from God this morning. And he said, I'm going to see something on the underground. You know, last time he spoke to us 2,000 years ago, he had more to say.
So in terms of prediction, that's not a good one. In the same way as the dream one isn't good. You do have to predict events before they happen, because afterwards it's a piece of piss.
But what is quite interesting in your book is the way that a lot of the reasons for a lot of these paranormal ideas come from us not understanding how our brains are working, or our brains working before we're conscious of them working. So can you sort of explain a bit about that? Because it's a little bit complex.
It is a bit complex. It gets into the issue about free will, which is always a hilarious topic to bring up at any dinner party. So you had the mind-body problem, which dates back a few years, and the issue of the mind-body problem is whether mind is separate to body and including brain. So what produces you? Where are you? And that's kind of interesting. If you can say to kids, you know, where are you? Well, point to where you are. They sort of do that, and you go, you know, and then they can do that sometimes, and stuff. So we sort of think, but where are we? You know, where are they? And so the sort of modern-day explanation is that the brain produces the sense of you, that you have no causal activity at all. So your brain is totally in charge. It's a very complicated thing that's making every decision in your life, and then producing the illusion that you are making that decision. And there's lots of evidence to support that. You put people in brain scanners and you say, oh, give us any number between 1 and 10. And before they have made their decision and said it, you see brain activity. So the brain is happening way before the mind. And because a lot of paranormal phenomena, those two things are separated with the automatic writing, where the medium goes into a trance, or even the table tipping. It seems to be the brain is pushing the table in a way, or writing, but the sense of you isn't being told about it. And so you think the spirits are working through you. So there's this big sort of philosophical thing going on embedded within the weird paranormal stuff.
So do we have any free will at all, do you think?
Well, in a sense, we can't have, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, because the brain is making the decisions for you. You can't have free will in a mechanistic universe.
So did your brain make the decision for you to come on this show rather than you? Yeah. It doesn't seem a very intelligent thing to
have. No. I was going to say, one of the two of us is going to get talking to tonight. So that's the argument, is the brain's behind everything. Because otherwise mind stuff is influencing brain stuff, and we've got no model for that at all. So the real mystery is how the brain produces consciousness and the sense of you, and we have no idea at all how that is happening. Absolutely not a Scooby with it. So there's a lot of work to be done.
And you can make your brain think that someone else's hand is your hand, and you know.
Yeah. And my lord,
it's good to know these things just for the future, when they get around to me in 30 years' time.
So these are producing out-of-body experiences where you can do this when you get home. I'll do my suggestion exercise. Okay. If I've got any suggestion, do you want to do a quick exercise thing if you don't mind? We'll try this. Everyone, put their hands out like this, keeping your hands level. That's great. Very good. And now, all you need to do is close your eyes. Trust me on this. Close your eyes, And in your mind's eye, just imagine a helium-filled balloon attached to a piece of string, and the end of the string is attached to the fingers of your right hand, so your right hand being pulled up towards the ceiling. Don't actually consciously move your hand, but just imagine your right hand being tugged higher towards the ceiling. Now imagine some big, heavy books. They're attached to another piece of string that's on the fingers of your left hand. So your left hand being pulled down by the heavy books as your right hand goes up towards the ceiling. The right hand going up, the left hand going down. Allow that thought to go into your mind as much as you can. Feel those heavy books, the light balloon. And now open your eyes. So, yeah. So there would have been... So it's a lovely little exercise, and you can do it to find out a lot about people. So if your right hand was much higher than your left hand, then you're very creative type, and likely to have paranormal experiences, and be psychotic. If your hands were level, then you're more down to earth. And not so creative, and not so likely to see ghosts and so on. And if your left hand was higher than your right, then you're really weird. so it's if you're out on a date or something, or something, and want to find out about someone as to whether or not how mad they are on the mad spectrum, you can just get them to close their eyes, do that, and you're away.
And have a little feel while they've got their eyes closed. Just run for it.
Run for it. See the hands going like that, you just run.
Spring your jack. Oh no, he hasn't been on yet.
So that's a suggestibility test, and it's very, very highly correlated with seeing ghosts and paranormal experiences and so on.
Oh, well, that was definitely me. Because it does feel, when you're writing, and especially when I was writing things like As It Occurs to Me, which I did very, very quickly. And sometimes I go to bed, we'd record them on the Monday night. Sometimes I go to bed on the Sunday night and not really have written anything. And I'd wake up on the Monday and it wasn't like an elf had arrived and there was a script. But I don't think, but sometimes it almost felt like it. Sometimes, you know, I'd go, oh, there's no way I'm going to write this script. And then within an hour or two, there'd be just a stream of stuff and it was all right. And it felt like someone else. It felt like it'd been projected into my brain.
That's after you'd woken up.
Yeah.
So what's possibly happening is you're going to bed thinking of certain thoughts and during the third of your life that you're asleep, all the brain is doing is turning off consciousness. It absolutely isn't dormant. In fact, in some ways, it's more active than when you're awake. And one of the things it's doing is working on those sorts of problems. So it's a well-known creativity technique. You sleep on it, and in the morning you wake up with the answer. So what's happening is that overnight, you know, your brain's racing through, and then in the morning, where does all this stuff come from? And being who we are, we come up with, you know, some weird elfy...
Aliens and elves.
Yeah, aliens and elves.
I didn't leave out any to eat acorn cups full of beer, though, so they... I was worried they wouldn't do it the next time, because you've got to do that. My wife has a dream dictionary beside her bed. Mm. Do you mind me talking about this? And thinks, do dreams actually, do they have significance and mean stuff, or are they just a load of sort of shit brain farts? Brain dumps, maybe.
Yes. My new book, out in March... Ooh. Effortless. it's about sleep and dreaming. So I've spent a long time looking at the dream issue. And the Freudian approach, which is basically all of your worries and well, it's not really that. The Freudian approach is about your mind's like an iceberg and you're only conscious of the top bit. And any time you have a sexual aggressive thought, you suppress it. And then they bubble up in everyday life in Freudian slips. Or you go to Freudian analysis and they do the silly word association. Don't go to Freudian analysis. So it's wasting your time. During dreams, the idea is those sexual ideas kind of crop up, and so the idea is you can read great meaning into people's dreams, and that's why Freudian people ask you about your dreams. Psychologists now think that actually it's exactly what I said before, that your brain is working on things that make you feel anxious. About 80% of dreams are negative when you wake people up out of REM state, which is sort of when they're most likely to be dreaming. You wake them up and ask them to report a dream. And so most dreams are negative, I say about 80%. Around about 75% of dreams are in black and white, which is kind of a weird thing. She tends to remember the colour ones. And the main finding from that dream research is most dreams are really dull. They are just that. I was at the office, nothing's happening. The dream world is incredibly dull. That was the main finding. But when it isn't dull, when there is some sense of anxiety, it's normally related to your everyday life. So it's pretty straightforward to see, you know, what's happening. You don't need to be a Freudian analyst. If someone says, you know, I work on my boss was killing me with a knife, you kind of think, well, I wonder what's going on there. Now, you're a Freudian, we'll go, oh, the knife's a penis, because they're like, they've got dirty minds. So everything to a Freudian analyst is a penis. But most of the dream work now isn't about that. It's simply you just reflect on what that dream is. It probably, in that sense, has a meaning for you. The dream dictionary is no use at all because dreams have different meanings for different people. Get rid of the dream dictionary. But actually talking through, if you had an anxious dream with your partner or whatever, isn't a bad thing.
Oh, no, don't tell. Let her have the dream dictionary.
And when you describe your dream as long and as detailed as possible, that's the... Just and if you can draw pictures or you can write it down, just keep it as long and as detailed. That's the best way forward.
Good. She's very good at that. So we'll wrap it up. But is there anything from the paranormal that you are unable to explain?
No. But the argument of the book, Paranormality, is that even though it's not true, and in fact because it's not true, it's even more interesting, that it tells us really fascinating things, like the mind-body issue, actually quite deep philosophical issues, about what it is to be human, what it is to make connections between things that aren't actually properly connected, and so on. So my argument is, no, it's not, but that makes it even more fascinating.
Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, Professor Richard Wiseman. Buy his fantastic books. Lovely stuff. Thank you very much. You can go. Thank you very much. How'd you like them sky potatoes?